Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of my podcast. We have a very special guest today joining all the way from UK. We have Richard and Mark of the Sixth Letter. Hi guys.
Hi.
Hey, how's it going?
How's your morning today?
Well, pretty relaxed so far, just easing into it. We're looking forward to doing this. So yeah, all good.
Right. Yeah. So before this, you guys were telling me that you're from Derby, right? Can you tell me a little bit about your place?
Derby is a pretty heavy, it's the middle of England is a pretty heavy industrial sort of place, pretty famous for manufacture, and not far away is a really famous town known for beer called Burton-on-Trent. So it's pretty industrial, it's pretty sort of working man, you know, nothing too glamorous really happens around here. It's pretty part of England, sort of just normal sort of thing, I'd say.
Right. So how is the situation now in the UK? Is life back to normal after the pandemic?
Pretty much, yeah. Like, it just seemed to be getting to that point where it's not like nothing ever happened, because I think that it was a nightmare that, you know, it will take a long time for us to forget. But yeah, things do seem to be getting back to a little bit more normality, which is a relief, you know.
Yeah, I mean, all gigs and live events are back on again. You don't have to wear a face mask. You just have to show that you've been vaccinated now. But pretty much everybody in the UK that needs to be vaccinated has been vaccinated. So yeah, it's pretty much as normal as it could be really right now.
Right. So guys, can you introduce yourself and tell me what you do in the band?
Yeah, so my name's Mark Mortar. I've always been a vocalist and a DJ, and then I transitioned into more production. So I do all the vocals in the band, and I sort of do sort of the synths and the sounds and, you know, anything that's sort of underneath the main guitars and bass. That's me too.
Yeah, I'm Rich, and I play the bass and also manage the band.
Right. So you can also mention the other guys in the band.
Oh, them guys.
They can't come to an interview. The other guys in the band, we've got Nick Eyre, who plays guitar. He also produces the band as well. So we've got our own studio, and Nick kind of, together with Mark, takes care of all the production. We've got JB, who also plays guitar, and Andy, that plays the drums. So we're a five-piece band, and we're pretty much self-sufficient, really, in that we write and record, produce all of our own music ourselves. We manage the band ourselves. You know, we're pretty much the epitome of DIY, I would say.
Right. So when did you guys perform live? When was the last time?
We, as a five-piece, haven't performed live yet. We've only been together in this form for, what, is it about a year?
Yeah, it was probably about 6 months before the pandemic that we got together, and then that kind of put a stop to it. So yeah,
but previous versions of, because I've had this band like quite a long time, really, I guess about 10 years. Mm. So it's been through a few different forms and phases. So to answer your question, the last gig we played, I think it was 2018, like December 2018.
Right.
Yeah, on time.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about the band a little bit more later, but can you guys tell me a little bit about your childhood, and what's your earliest memory of music?
I think for me, like, I'm the youngest kid of three, so I've got two older brothers, and my oldest brother is a drummer. So as a kid, and when he was younger, he was getting into all kinds of music, and he had the loudest stereo. So anything that was being played, it was being played by him. And I'd always just be listening to whatever he was playing. So he, as a drummer, and being interested in so many different styles, that kind of formed my interests. And I guess other than that, my parents, they listen to stuff like, I guess, Queen and some rock stuff like that, even some really corny stuff like Cliff Richard. But yeah, I would say my brother is the main influence. And when with his varied interests, that that sort of, along with like skate culture, that kind of got me into hip hop music, which again, it encompassed all genres, you know, that's kind of what drew me to it. You know, anything and everything could be part of this music that these guys were making. And again, coming from the middle of England and where that was coming from, it was completely fresh and alien to everything that I knew. So, but yeah, I guess that forms my early memories of how I got into music. How about you?
Yeah, for me, it was, again, like my mum and dad were into quite corny older rock, like Meatloaf and stuff like that. So that was probably my earliest memories of music. But when I got to school, you know, started through friends listening to bands like Green Day and NoFX and like a lot of punk rock, and that really got me in, you know, into the whole I want to buy a bass and start a band. And yeah, that's where it all sort of started, I would say, from the age of about 13 or 14. And yeah, I guess we've both never looked back since, right? Like, no. You fall in love with music at that age, and I think it just stays with you.
Right. So, Mark, tell me a little bit about the hip-hop, you know, because I'm aware of what, you know, British, especially Britpop, because I was a big fan of Britpop. And, you know, we know that there's a lot of rock and roll, even like Black Sabbath and all these bands came from the UK. But hip-hop-wise, were they actually British hip-hop bands? What are the bands? Because I can't really remember.
Yeah, I mean, I guess because hip-hop in its general sort of marketed form was very American in its sound. So
right.
Anytime a British sort of hip-hop act was coming through, it wasn't really heavily promoted, but there was a lot going on because obviously that it was a culture that was really, you know, interesting to many. And plus, with England being a really quite a multicultural place anyway, it was a kind of a genre of music that appealed to many people. So it brought, you know, a lot of people together anyway, like in that respect. So there was a lot going on. It just wasn't heavily publicized, but there were, if you were into it, it's like anything. If you look for it, you'll find it. And that's kind of where I was at with it. And there were quite a few bands. There was one band that took on quite a Public Enemy type sound early on called Gunshot. And they were a pretty big band. They were quite popular. And you had some other acts like quite early on, like Derek B. I'm trying to think who else. You had there was a band that was signed. I think it was the first hip hop band that was signed to like Virgin Records or something. They were called The Brotherhood, and you know, they had a really, really good sound. And again, it wasn't overly poppy. It wasn't, you know, they weren't trying to sell loads of like dancey, corny type records. It was still quite an underground, true to hip hop thing. I think that's a signature of the UK hip hop scene, is that it always was quite true to how it started, whereas America started to go quite R&B with things and bring in a lot of singers, and you know, and it became quite a big pop sort of genre. In the UK, that never really happened. And it has kind of fizzled out in a way, but it's still there in its underground sense. There'll be clubs and bars that play funk and breaks. And that's kind of how I came up into the DJ thing, really. Like, I wasn't always a vocalist performer. Like, I'd record tracks at home, like on my sampler, and I'd put down a few vocals, but I never really had the confidence at the time to go out and MC, but I was always the DJ side of things. Again, that's how I got into it. I loved the scratching and actual musical aspects of hip hop, the lyrical content and the relatability of it. I wasn't too bothered about, because at the end of the day, it was very American and it didn't really mean a lot to me, but as a whole, it was all about the music. And that's, you know, we'll get back to it, I'm sure, but that's kind of what's formed how the band is now. Like, yes, I'm the vocalist, but I view the music as, you know, the biggest part of it, and the vocals just sort of add a layer.
Right. So you mentioned like you were influenced by hip hop, and Rich mentioned punk rock. The funny thing is that in New York back in the day, right, both punk and hip hop were sort of starting at the, like, in the same, even in the same neighborhoods, right? They were having like they were, while they were having punk shows, they were having hip hop shows. Like it was happening sort of parallel, two parallel subcultures, right? But eventually those things actually get mixed up.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, like, Rich and I have got, you know, I was into the hip hop and he was into the punk rock. But like you just said, they are very similar. Like, they are very do it yourself. Like, you know, punk bands would, you know, gather in a garage and just make noise and do what they wanted to do and not care about how they, you know, how were they perceived by anyone. You know, they weren't trying to get fame. They were just doing their thing. And the same with hip hop and the way that started. You know, it's kind of smash and grab. Like, I'm going to take this loop from this track and I'm going to put a beat on it and it's now going to be my song and I'm going to say what I want on it. And but yeah, I think that was the appeal. Again, that's kind of what got me into punk too. And as the skate scene sort of opened my eyes to how these two genres were actually, you know, one and the same and being appreciated by more or less the same people, that sort of, I was allowed to discover more guitar-based music and, you know, and not necessarily leave hip-hop behind, but just see how the two things are linked and how I can sort of integrate my interests and push forward in a creative way.
Right. So you as a DJ, like, how did it that transform into having a band? Like, you wanted to have your own band?
Well, I guess, if you're looking at it in a historically, like being a bedroom producer, like you're in your room, you're like just like being in a studio, you create your own little space, got your equipment, and you're basically just sampling and working and figuring out how to make the sounds you want to make. But it's all, you're always on your own, unless you've got some friends and stuff hanging around. Like, no one's doing anything except you, but like it feels quite solitary. And over time, I got sort of a little bit tired of trying to find samples and, you know, trying to find things that haven't been used before or that kind of thing. So I wanted to start, I guess, making samples. So there'd be a friend of mine who played guitar and he could play some nice little jazzy licks or some bluesy sort of riffs. And I'd just ask him to come in and play, you know, and I would literally just sample that, chop that up and make music out of original sounds, you know. And as that moved along and I started to put vocals on top of it, it was just like, oh, should we go and do this in the studio, you know. At first we were playing beats off of like a CD player or something and the guitarist would just play along and we'd just sort of not jam, but, you know, sort of rehearse what we're doing. And over time I just sort of thought, well, let's, you know, I kind of like this. I kind of want to make it a band. It feels better to be collaborating with people rather than just being by myself.
Right, right. I mean, having that mix of live guitars and having that, you know, sort of backing tracks or sort of a sampling happening in the background, it actually gives, I mean, it really gives a different sort of energy, right? And it sort of fills all the gaps, like on a traditional band, right? The tracks sort of fill in that gap, and I think it makes the songs like feel more whole. Like that's what I feel from a lot of this sort of you know, a lot of people who use this type of music. Guys, I want to ask you something. So being from Britain, Where were you guys when all this Britpop was happening? Like, you know, Oasis, Blur and all this. There was a whole era of that, right? Where were you guys back on those times?
I think I was at art college, just studying graphic design. But yeah, all that was happening, you know, around the stuff that we were into. You know, like, we'd be lying if there weren't a couple of Oasis or Blur songs that, you know, that we like. But I never really was drawn into the hype of it necessarily. Like, again, just the sounds that we were into, like that sort of stuff was just, I guess, in the charts and just doing its thing. But yeah, I was at college. What were you doing while that was going on?
Yeah, I would have been towards the end of high school and into college as well when all that was going on. Again, I wasn't hugely into it. I was more into the punk rock stuff, but I would have to say, if you put me on the spot, Oasis were a far better band than Blur.
Yeah, I mean, they got more of a rock band, a bit more sort of a bit more of a pub band, weren't they? That had a bit more appeal to, I guess, those guys. How about you? What did you like about it? Where were you at with that?
Yeah, because actually back in those days, I'm actually originally from Sri Lanka, so I was in Sri Lanka that time.
Yeah,
and I was all into it because I had all the posters, all the Oasis, Blur, even like the Spice Girls and all that. I was like really deeply into that. But one of the bands that I really liked from that, they were not Britpop, but you know, you remember Prodigy? Because I had all the albums of Prodigy, and I used to have that haircut of Keith, and yeah. I was really into that.
I absolutely love the Prodigy. Like, again, coming up as a producer, you know, chopping up sounds, and that the Prodigy were always, you know, I wouldn't say they're an influence on our band, but in terms of music and what they've done and what they do, I absolutely love them. Like, I've seen them, I don't know, 5 times or something like that. Like, just amazing. Like, again, he started off chopping hip hop stuff up, and then he clearly got into punk and rock, and right. Just seeing what he's done with their sound. Like, yeah, they're a massive, amazing band.
Right. So, Richard, tell me a little bit about your journey on sort of punk rock side before coming to the Sixth Letter.
Yeah, so as I said, I got into the punk rock at school, and I had some friends that were into similar music as well, and we literally went and bought guitars and decided we were gonna learn and start a band just because we thought it was cool and amazing, and we wanted to do that. So that's what we did. We kind of just towards the tail end of high school, we started rehearsing. We started off just playing cover songs of, like, you know, Blink 182 and Alkaline Trio and Goldfinger and stuff like that. And then we started transitioning into writing our own stuff. And then after we left school, we bought a crappy old van that used to be a police van, and we just started touring. We just decided we were gonna play as many shows as we could in as many different bars, you know, anywhere we could get a show, we played. And we traveled for a few years doing that, and eventually we released a couple of records and ended up on a label, and we toured Japan, China, all over Europe and stuff like that. And at that time as well, Marks was involved because we knew him through mutual friends, and he's a graphic designer as well. So we got introduced because you were designing some artwork for us and things, and we thought, you know, what he was doing with the hip hop, and that was just so cool as well. And we've kind of remained friends for all these years, and I've been in various bands since, and Marks has had various iterations of the Sixth Letter and has had that going and some other side projects. And it just got to a point a couple of years ago where it just made sense for us to come together, really.
Right, right. So Mark, this Sixth Letter, tell me why you decided to name the band the Sixth Letter.
Well, I was a solo guy, and I was, you know, I had DJ names that were alluding to me being a soloist. And so when it all sort of started to become more of a band, I just wanted to have a name that didn't suggest it was just me, because it wasn't just me. I might well be a creative leader, but the whole point behind getting a band is so it's a collaborative thing. But the Sixth Letter simply is, it's the initial of my dad's name. That's all it is. So it's the sixth letter of the alphabet.
Mm.
And it's just a simple nod to family and, you know, collective love, as it were. So it's a mysterious sounding band name, but it's quite a simple, there's a simple reason why it's called that.
Right, right. Because I was actually sort of searching on that, and so it's the sixth letter is F, and then there is like there's a different alphabet. It says it's WOW, something like that. The sixth letter is actually WOW. So like are all these different. Yeah,
that's cool. I like that.
We'll do that.
I'll do that next. The next time I have to answer that.
right. When I hear you, like, I saw your latest video. The Sugar Knot, And I don't, I mean, although when you look at it, you might sort of immediately sort of think, oh, this is a new metal sort of band. But when you listen deeply, it goes beyond new metal. Although it looks, maybe it just looks new metal, but to me, I feel that funk influence. I see a little bit of like a metalcore sort of influence also there, and then of course hip hop. So how would you guys describe the sound of Six Letter?
Well, yeah, I think it, first of all, yeah, image wise, we've always kind of looked this way. So like as people into music throughout, like through that new metal era when things were sort of crossing over the skate, the metal, the hip hop, the punk, we've always kind of just maintained a look that does look like that. Influences wise, we've come all the way through that too. So everything from like, you know, like you say, a little bit of metalcore through like set bands like Senses Fail, who sort of bridged that gap in sort of in metalcore, punk rock, emo. We're right. All into that too. Like we've come up through that. But yeah, what? How else would you describe like? We just blend up what we're into, don't we?
Yeah, it literally is kind of a melting pot of what we like. You know, we've got guys that are into Thrice and Architects and Alexis on Fire and stuff. We've got guys that, you know, like got that are into quite punky stuff and hardcore.
Yeah.
And then we've got, you know, hip hop, pop and punk rock in there. So we kind of, yeah, it is a melting pot of everybody's influences, really. And I guess, yeah, the easiest way to describe it is probably quite genre bending, really. You know, we are a rock band, but we have got lots of different influences. And I guess we, you know, we try and just, I mean, we don't try and have a particular sound. We just write the songs as we see them. But I think it does give us quite a distinctive, unique kind of take on it.
Yeah.
Right. I really love the term genre bending because there are so many amazing bands. Like I think the first one comes to mind is Beastie Boys. Beastie Boys were you can classify them as like any genre, right? They were punk, they were hardcore, they were hip hop, they were even electronic because they later stuff, they do a lot of electronic stuff. So it's, there's so many different bands, but Beastie Boys for me is like one of my favorite bands with, you know?
Yeah. Again, like being hip-hop artists at their core, you know, like same with me, like it's finding out that you can actually use anything to create what you want to create, and they're a great example. You know, like not only have they blended various genres into their hip-hop that they make, but then they'd also go off and they literally play punk rock. You know, that's like right. How the song, you know, Sabotage came about. You know, all of a sudden they're on, you know, a late night TV show and they're just a punk band, and it's just so cool to see. And again, a huge, you know, inspiration to just know that you can do what you want as long as it's not badly done. I think like it's like with me being so close to the hip-hop stuff and then new metal being what it was, like I was very conscious. I mean, I already look a bit like Fred Durst, like that, I can't avoid that. So I didn't want to sound like that because it would just wouldn't. They're great. They sound like that. I don't want to do that. Like that's, I love them. So like when it came to like blending what I do with what we do, it was just like trying to create, I guess like a punk rock version of a rap rock sound. You know, I'm never not going to do like a rap delivery. But as I've progressed, you know, the other side of my vocals is coming through too. So I think that's what makes us unique is what we blend, but also what we end up sounding like is quite hard to pin down into categories or genres. And that's, I'm really quite proud of that, to be honest.
Right. So you guys already have two albums, right? You released two albums and one EP.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I started off a long time ago. I basically got signed to a label, I don't know, like 12 years ago, based on the solo stuff I was doing, which was predominantly quite sample-based. So I think it was like really late MySpace era. Like I'd got tracks on there, and this label got in touch with me and said, you know, oh, we really like a few of these tracks, you know, we'll sign you, like, but you need to make an album. And at that point, you know, I was really into what I was doing, but I was also just starting to get into using people to make music rather than samples. But we made the record, and as I was, you know, I was signed off sort of doing like the hip hop thing. So the very first album, Woe Is Me, that was, you know, again, like, I was so happy to be able to create an album and have it released. So whatever came out was literally just a product of where I'd been up to that point. And it was like being in a candy shop. All these influences were coming out. It's, again, like, I was trying to cram in quite a lot of things into one record. But it ended up pretty good. And again, it's all self-produced. Like, there was no studio sort of helping me with it. I'm, you know, really proud. But yeah, various versions of the band, that was just before things started becoming more of a band thing. So after that, a few, you know, like I say, a couple of EPs. I think the first time I really started working with somebody solidly was an old bandmate of Rich's in the pop punk days, a guy called Wes. Shout out to Wes. And he and I really started focusing on pushing the more guitar-y aspect of what we were doing. We weren't going to turn my back on the hip hop thing, because that was still sort of working as we were still on this label. Still kind of had to keep a hand in that. So tracks like The Get Up Club and like Box of Sharps, you know, they were still very true to the hip hop thing. And again, I love hip hop. I'll never not love it. So to be able to make it and have a platform to put it on, you know, just really excited me. So kind of kept that sound going. But yeah, me and Wes really worked on pushing the guitar, the band sound of things. And that's where those records came from. And then from there, like, just getting these guys in and pushing things further, it's just gotten bigger and bigger sound wise.
Right. So when you look at the songs that you do now, what sort of subject matter you're like tackling, or what sort of message you're bringing from your songs?
A lot of them are based on, like, it won't be any surprise, you know, interpersonal relationships, whether they're romantic or whether they're professional, just the way we navigate through the world, and how confusing it can be at times. And just, I guess, being aware of one's mental health and not necessarily having any answers or being an expert in that respect, but just being aware. I think a lot of the stuff I write, it's quite hard to pin down, because it's a lot of different thoughts. It's a lot of different things that are coming in from different angles that I just like to portray. Well, I ask a lot of questions. I think that's what a lot of what I write is. But in terms of subject matter, I sometimes call what I do somber optimism, which I'm aware of the sadness and difficulty that life can put forward. And I've experienced some of it and dealt with it. But that's with a feeling of optimism, a feeling of, yeah, sometimes things are pretty bad and you know, and you can focus on that. But if there's actually a positive route and somewhere where you can go and something that you've got your eye on, which is keeping you going, then that's basically what the focus is.
Right. So I really love the term sugar nut. So I mean, is this something you guys created, this term?
Yeah, I guess it is. I love, again, being a lyricist, being traditionally a rap guy, hip hop guy, I'm always interested on, you know, play on words, you know, sort right. of things that sound one thing but mean another thing, or, you know, that kind of thing. So the term sugarnut, again, it sounds like juggernaut, which is right. a great big lorry that's smashing through everything. And I guess I related that term to being with a female, you know, some, you know, they're very sweet. but they can also smash right through you with reckless abandon. And again, the term sugar, you know, being sugar, like it's loosely related to like blood sugar too. Like it just, they're running through your veins. You can't quite get rid of them. And they're right. smashing your dicks at the same time. So that's what that song kind of is about and where that term came from. Just a kind of a funny way of describing a woman.
Yeah. Richard, can you tell me a little bit about the music video of that?
Yeah, so again, with the music video, we just wanted to really capture the energy of the song because it is quite, it's an up-tempo, driving kind of song. And we wanted to just have a video that really captured the energy of it. And loosely speaking, the theme of the song when Marx wrote it was loosely based on AI, you know, that film Ex Machina where the AI is created and then ends up kind of, you know, taking over. That was what you had in mind when you were kind of writing it.
Yeah.
Third person.
Loosely, yeah. The song, again, it's relationship based. So the AI theme, it's that feeling that, you know, you've been created by somebody or like you've been created by a situation that you're in. And then you learn that you can find your way out and you learn, you know, so the AI learns how a human operates and learns how to manipulate its way out and basically escape. But yeah, in the video, we tried to get that aspect in with some of those cutaway shots where I'm in front of the glass. A little bit of a mishap occurred. On the day, somebody that was meant to arrive to play the AI didn't show. So we just carried on with the theme. But at the end of the day, like I think a little bit of less is more. I think there's a little bit more mystery around what I'm supposed to be looking at in that scene. So, but yeah, that's the theme of the video. Just capture the energy. We were also keen to just get out and show what we were doing after such a long time being locked up. We just let loose when we were shooting that and just wanted to make sure that the energy of the song, and again, I guess suggest what was left, you know, next to come, was exciting and to sort of stay tuned.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think when we filmed the video, it was like, 2 years of pent up energy, not playing live and stuff, just came out in the video, I guess. So yeah, it was cool.
Right. I know the movie that you guys are talking about, Ex Machina, right? It became so scary at the end, right? Like, not scary means like ghost, but like, damn, that can happen, right? Like,
yeah, exactly, right? It definitely could happen.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Right.
Nah, I love that film.
Yeah. So I was kind of surprised that you guys also released another single, which is an acoustic version, right?
So yeah, we put out Sugarnaut, and then we've been putting out an acoustic version the week after. So yeah, we're releasing songs every 2 weeks since then, and in between that, yeah, an acoustic version of each one. So each song that we've got, acoustic version again. Just I love when bands just have alternate different versions of what they do. You know, you can see their influences and you can feel what they do. It's not, you know, there is a lot of magic that can go on in the studio, so it's nice to sort of just strip it back and show the song for exactly what it is. And I personally love that. I love that we're doing it with what we're doing.
Yeah, definitely. I think especially with, like you said earlier, with our sound, there is a lot of samples and things going on that really layer the songs up and fill the songs out. And I think giving an alternative perspective and just stripping it right back to just an acoustic guitar and a vocal really does show, you know, the roots of the song and gives it a whole different dimension. So as Mark said, at the moment we're releasing, you know, full band songs. We had six tracks and we were toying with, you know, do we release them as an EP or do we release them individually? And we just decided, like, with the way that music is consumed, or well, just content in general is consumed now, it's better to kind of space it out and give people something to look forward to and put something new out every week and keeps it interesting for the listeners and for ourselves as well, rather than kind of just throwing it all out there. So yeah, we're releasing, you know, we've got 12 weeks of basically releasing a track every week now, a full band version and then an acoustic version. We've also got some nice little acoustic videos coming out on YouTube as well. And you know, we've put out the Sugar Naught video and we're putting out a new video called Don't Give Up as well, which is coming out next week. So that's, yeah, it's exciting to just be able to kind of share the fruits of our labor that we've put in over the lockdown and really, you know, keep releasing content and get some momentum going. It's really nice for us to do it that way.
Right. So now that the things are sort of getting back to normal in the UK, are you guys looking forward to performing live or any plans?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, playing live for us now is kind of the last piece of the jigsaw. We spent 2 years recording and producing and planning, and you know, we're happy now that we're putting out this content and we're getting new fans every day, which is, you know, brilliant for us, and we're doing podcasts with people like yourself. So it's really nice for us to be spreading the music out around the world. But for us, really, yeah, getting out and playing live is the final piece of the jigsaw, and we're looking at trying to get out and play as many live shows as we can next year, really. We're going to put out some new music next year as well. We're already working on that at the minute. We've kind of got 5 tracks that we're working on in the studio, so they'll be released next year, and yeah, hopefully lots of live Sick Letter shows as well.
Right. So guys, what's your message to the viewers of this video?
I guess we really appreciate anyone that checks us out, like as musicians, you know, like we do what we do. We love it. We'll do it regardless. But to have people listen and to contact us and tell us, you know, what they think of it, that means everything to us. And yeah, keep your heads up and, you know, keep on rocking.
Right. Anybody you want to shout out to?
Don't think so. Not at the moment, have we?
No, just anyone that's listening to the music and sharing it. Like you said, we really appreciate it. And, you know, we're a relatively small band, so it really, really helps, you know, everybody that checks us out and shares it and pays an interest. We, you know, it means the world to us. And yeah, we interact with everybody that reaches out to us. So, you know, if you like the music, don't be shy, I would say, is the message.
Yeah, I'm a huge music nerd. I'm a huge fan. I'm a fan first and foremost. I'm so lucky to be able to do what I do, the way that I do it, and with who, you know, with the guys that I do it with. But yeah, just anyone that listens to us, you know, if they want to, you know, give us a holler, then we're all too happy to hear from them.
Right. So tell everyone how they can, you know, follow you and how they can listen to your music.
So yeah, we've got a website. So it's thesixthletter.co.uk. So it's spelt in the words. So it's no numbers. It's all letters, thesixthletter.co.uk. You can link to all our socials from there, but we're on Instagram at thesixthletterband, Facebook/thesixthletter, and everything we do is on Spotify, Apple Music, Deezer, Amazon, the lot. So anything we've got that is released, you can find it, you know?
Right. You know, I was actually surprised to find out that there are 200 streaming sites in the world, which I don't even know more than 5.
Crazy, right?
Who's on them? Yeah,
we're the same as you. I think it's just the top 5, isn't it, that we know?
Right. So Richard, Marks, thanks for joining this. I really enjoy talking to you. And Richard, thanks for reaching out to me on this. And I was able to discover you guys from that. And I'm looking forward to your new music and all the best with your touring and performing live. I think things will get better and you will be able to tour also other places. Looking forward to that.
Definitely. And thanks. So yeah, thanks a lot for having us. We've really enjoyed it and really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. It's been really good. Really enjoyed it. I love talking about music. I could do it all day, but yeah. thank you very much. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, guys. So have a great day ahead.
You all right. Too.
And you. Peace out.
Bye.